Simone on the voice of New York, 710 WOR.
I don't know. It feels funny today. Just a weird day. It's gloomy outside. I didn't realize it's like half a holiday. You know, on all the TV screens up here, one of them we always have CNBC. I didn't realize the market is closed today.
Yes.
Trying to figure out why I'm seeing Jay Leno's Garage, 14 episodes on CNBC.
That's the best they got when the market's closed?
I don't understand these garage shows.
How many cars you got? 50?
No, he's got like 500.
500?
Oh, yeah. He's got, I think it's in an airport. It's like four enormous airport hangars cut together.
Yeah, you got too much money. You got 500 cars.
Well, but he was a mechanic. He was actually a Rolls-Royce mechanic. He was a top auto mechanic, so he knows what he's doing. But then you get these guys like Seinfeld that collect Porsches.
Yeah.
You ever see these Porsche collections? You can't tell one from the other. One is this shade of blue. The other one's this slightly different shade of blue. One's a 62. One is a 63. They're all the same.
And you just take turns driving this car today?
And he's another one. He's got a garage here with 20 of them, but then he's got an airport hangar, a hangar at the airport with hundreds of them. And then you have to get licensed as a car dealer if you have that many cars. Because then it gives you all kinds of tax breaks.
Oh, well, all right. There you go. There you go.
And then you have to hire your own mechanics.
You can't even work on your own car?
I don't know how these guys do this. I know car collections. They take you down, they show you, look at this, and they got 47 cars. You know, I got like one car, and I got everything in it I need, right? You got everything you want in your glove compartment.
Yeah, sure.
You got all the things you need in that little thing between the seats.
And you don't have to figure out which one you want to drive when you want to go someplace.
No, but you got everything you need. I need my sunglasses. I need my charger for the phone. I need, the things you want to keep there.
Yes.
Now you switch to your 37th Porsche. Oh, there's no charger in it. What, do you move everything each time you get in a different car?
I don't have that problem.
If they're all, again, these cars, you ever see these Lamborghinis and these...
Yeah.
You ever ride in one? It's like getting an MRI. It's the most uncomfortable car ever.
Those are the ones with the doors that come up straight.
But they look incredible from the outside. Get inside. Your ass is scraping the ground when you drive. It's the most uncomfortable car. There's no leg room, no anything.
But it costs a lot of money.
But it looks good when you pull up
there. Yeah, right. I bet.
Anyway, so it's Good Friday. It's also Passover tonight. So this will be one weird night tonight. Nobody will be out anywhere.
I'm sure you'll find someone.
Well, that's true. The auto show opens this weekend. Speaking of, that's another thing. What do people go to the auto show for? If they're thinking of buying a car, to see all the different cars in one place?
That. You see the futuristic cars. Supposedly you can make some deals if you want to buy them there.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, they have showroom deals.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure those are not the best deals. But
I wouldn't think so. But
and I know, you go every year to the auto show, you see these futuristic cars. Think back all the futuristic cars you've seen at the auto shows. You'll notice you never saw one of them ever actually show up in real life.
Right.
Not one of them ever appeared anywhere. They're just for auto shows. It's like that stuff in fashion runway shows. It never shows up in real life anywhere. So if you're in town and there's nothing else to do, the auto show.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. It's okay.
For a couple of hours.
It's okay. They have these gorgeous models. That's for the husbands getting dragged around by the wife. I love the boat show.
That is fun to go to.
Oh, you go to these boat shows, there's a million people. Not one of them has a boat, is going to get a boat. There's nobody there that is interested in the boat. There's guys that want to pretend they got a boat. There's women looking for rich guys.
Well, if you have a boat.
That might have a boat.
Yeah, well, you have a boat, you usually get beautiful women.
Yeah, that's all women there looking for boat owners,
yeah,
but
right.
The guys are all there looking for the women. Nobody in the whole place ever had a boat. So President Trump, very, very happy about Roseanne. That's a good thing. We found some audio of Hillary. We were talking about this before. Hillary is, was this Rutgers?
Rutgers, yeah.
So this is great. Hillary, 200,000 a speech, 500,000 a speech, a million a speech. Even if it's a college, you're giving a break, 200,000, 25,000 at Rutgers. Listen to this. You know, it's like you don't have to go to Broadway to see Sunset Boulevard anymore. Just go see Hillary. You want to see an aging nut, bitter about the past. You don't need Sunset Boulevard. Listen to Hillary.
The election was pretty traumatic.
It goes on too long. So if she says it's traumatic, that means Huma and somebody else were yanking her off the window ledge.
And so
that's the problem. She does that fake laugh. She doesn't realize it's it, what would it have to do with losing the election?
You, anytime she laughs, you know she's not laughing really inside.
And she says it was traumatic. That's it. But she goes, it was traumatic. It goes on wait.
Yeah, you know, I think there were a lot of people who were like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to have to think about it. I don't want to have to hear about it.
So this is the fake on stage, Hillary. So people say, oh, my gosh. You ever hear her language in person? In private, it's never, oh, my gosh.
Totally, that's how I felt. I took a lot of long walks in the woods. Drank my share of Chardonnay. I did what I could to...
And now she's an alcoholic who every bit knows her, says she's stinking drunk 24 hours a day. You saw the video of her falling down the stairs. The most telling thing in that video is Huma, who's right behind her looking at her phone. She's texting somebody. And every time Hillary falls, Huma doesn't even look up. She's obviously seen this every day. It means nothing to her, watching her stumble. By the way, the speech yesterday, big cast on her arm, probably took another fall.
They said she fell in a bathtub.
Yup, yeah. Everybody says that knows her says she's just drunk night and day. We're all laughing.
It's sad, I know.
No, it's not. It's great. It's really great. I mean, if it was a nice person, you wouldn't want to see anything happen. Yeah. With this bitter... nasty with her fake dossiers, her fake Russian hoax, her foundation scam, all the stealing, robbing, pillaging, thieving, rotten, calling everybody deplorables. It's great to watch her just disintegrate right into the gutter. We're really going to enjoy this. Hey, Laura Ingraham went after, how do you say his name?
Hogg, yeah.
What's his first name? David.
I guess so.
From... Parkland Schools. It's great that he's emerged as a leader. It's great that he's fighting for a cause. Although, I don't know, you look at this guy, he looks a little too ambitious, a little like he's plotting a political career.
See, everybody says that, and I think that's because he just kind of, he's cute. He's telegenic. He looks good on TV. He's well-spoken.
He's sort of cute. He has kind of a...
I don't know.
Well, he's cute, but he's got a real... what's the word? Like a tough look in his eyes, like a ferocious, ambitious look in his eyes. Justin Bieber looks cute.
Okay.
He's probably 10 times more ferocious, but he puts on that nice little look.
You're in a school, you're getting shot up.
Well, that's true.
You got the right to be angry.
Yeah, he's been through hell. And so Laura Ingraham, who tends to be a little sarcastic, makes snide comments, makes those kind of jokes. What did she say about him? It was...
He was whining about not getting into college.
Yeah, he did something about he couldn't get into college, but then she said, stop whining. But that's Laura Ingraham. She's like that. And he really went after her. He threatened a sponsor boycott. He listed all her sponsors on Twitter. He got a congresswoman involved. And Fox went nuts. The last thing you need is something like this. They made her apologize immediately. And
They six sponsors dropped the show. I don't know if they went back after.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's kind of for the little innocent 14-year-old. That's kind of thuggish to go right to that.
Yeah,
that's going nuclear in the first round. That's that's a big thing for him.
Somebody's got to be advising that kid.
Well, it was always believed that all of this marching and all this stuff was financed by the usual suspects, from Soros to Media Matters was involved, all the left-wing hit job assassination organizations, and maybe they went right to that. They organized that boycott, hashtags, list of sponsors, here's the address real fast. So Laura Ingraham has backed down. Here is Hogg.
So it's been kind of annoying having to deal with that and everything else that's been going on. But at this point, I was, we're changing the world.
Oh.
There he goes, changing the world.
Yeah, I can see the difference. You look outside. That's really different. But if it's annoying, just don't deal with it. I mean, I've been made fun of by Laura Ingraham. Just don't worry about it.
Yeah, well. He's a kid. Look,
he's a kid.
And a victim of a school shooting.
That's true.
You can't, don't belittle him.
You can't pick on a
you
kid.
You deserve it.
Yeah.
I think it's great that corporate America is standing with me and the rest of my friends, because when you come against any one of us, whether it be me or anybody else, you're coming against all of us. And I think it's important that we stand together as both corporate and civic America to take action against these people and show them that they cannot push us around.
All right. No, he's all right.
Pretty slick, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a little too slick.
Yeah.
He's a little slick. I think that's what it is. You know, for how old is he, 15?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, no, he's probably 17.
Okay, but even for 17, he's a little too slick. You know, then he keeps talking month after month. Pretty soon he's going to start saying, I'll tell you, he's going to find someone named Hillary. Yeah. You never know. He's very slick, this kid. But definitely got a big future ahead of him. So
imagine that he didn't get into any college.
Yeah, that's hey, what college didn't take this kid? He's very, very slick. Very, very slick. The only thing is, and it's the only thing that bothers me about this march, you can't explain to these people what you really got to focus on. They're all focused on these assault weapons, which is fine. I don't mind banning those, but that's not the problem. 93% of the shootings in this country are done with illegal handguns. Most of the shootings in this country take place in Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, places like that. You've got to do something about that. These school shootings with the big rifle, big assault, that's 0.4% of the shootings every year. So I don't see them targeting the whole picture. They're going after just the tiniest little aspect of this. That's what bothers me.
It's not a big change to make. Raise the limit to buy an assault weapon.
I'm for that. I'm all for it. You can ban them if you want. It's fine. Yeah. But it doesn't change anything. So you've solved 0.4% of the problem. You're still going to have 90.
You're comparing two different aspects of the gun issue. You know, the illegal guns that are killing people in Chicago is a different problem than these mass shootings.
No, it's all the same problem. If this is a terrible Parkland case. How many were shot? 37?
No, in Parkland was 17.
17. But there was another shooting, was 37. In Chicago, you have 40 people shot every weekend. Every weekend, without fail. You have, so far this year, 9,700 shootings. 9,700 shootings. 17 of them were with that assault weapon. So you're not really addressing the problem. It's great to go after that, but the problem is they'll go after that, get that changed, and then they all go back to sleep. That's the end of it. That's the problem. Politicians... it's a little symbolic gesture, and then it doesn't solve most of the problem.
Well, they didn't even get a symbolic gesture.
Well, we did it once before, you know, with Bill Clinton. He banned those assault weapons for 10 years. Number of shootings did not drop at all during those 10 years. The same killers, they just switched to other guns. So that's the problem. If you went to a hospital and they gave you a medicine, they said, this will cure 0.4% of your problem, would you be happy when you left?
Let's solve the whole problem.
Exactly. I'm just saying that's the only thing that bothers me. Rather than the marching and the signs, everybody sit in a big conference room and nail this down, figure out all the steps you need to take, not this, we'll take one little step and go back to sleep. That's the problem. That's the big problem.
All right. Get the NRA on board.
And the NRA has nothing to do with anything. They're not even a big lobbyist. You know, they always talk about NRA controls. The NRA is not even in the top 20 when it comes to lobbyists. They're not a big lobbying dollar amount. They don't spend that much. They're not that big a deal. Basically, they just represent gun owners.
Right.
And I don't think, have we ever had any of these shootings? Look, this year, 9,700. Have any of them been done by legal gun owners? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Very few.
Well, the one in Parkland was legal. The kid bought it legally.
Okay, that's one. But that's,
the other guy from in Las Vegas, it was legal.
But this year, let's go. Yeah, okay, but that's again, the Parkland is 17 out of 9,700. Yeah. So most of them, 99.9% of them, are illegal and don't have gun permits. That's the problem. Now, here's a bigger problem. Selfies. If you take a selfie, doctors, psychologists now say there is something wrong with you, that you do need treatment.
We knew that, right? Wait a minute. How many selfies do you take?
Very few.
I always see you on Instagram.
No, you don't. You see like one selfie every few days. Not like these people that have 27 selfies a day. Very rarely.
Well, all right.
Most of my Instagram, in fact, check out Instagram today, my Instagram. You'll see the greatest milkshake for Easter. Most of it are food pictures.
That's true. It is a lot of food.
Yeah, but if you take selfies, you're suffering from narcissism, addiction, and mental illness. and you need to be treated. Actually, I think these scientists and psychologists are suffering from rent increases, and they need more business, and that's why they're recommending you come and get treatment. Hey, everybody's worried about Facebook, all the things they know about you. You know, it turned out they have a record of all your phone calls, all your texts, if you have an Android phone. But a lot of people now, this is where I Google and everybody else, they're in hiding right now. They don't want to get tied into this. But there's an internet researcher that downloaded his Google data and was stunned. It's his data is equivalent of 400,000 pages in Word.
Whoa.
400,000 pages. They track his location every second of the day. They do this to you, too. Google tracks the location of your phone.
Well, I'm sure they do, yeah.
Every second of the day, and they store this forever. They know every place you've been, how long you were there, how long you stayed, when you left, how long it takes you to get somewhere. They have a record of every image and every file you have ever downloaded in history. Every picture you've taken, they have the metadata on where and when it was taken. Every photograph you've taken. They keep track of every search you've ever done, every message, everything you've ever done on Google, everything. No, if you delete your account, it's still stored forever and ever and ever. That's kept on file no matter what you delete. You know when you go into Google and delete your history?
Mm-hmm.
That's only on your computer. They still store it. They have it. It's not deleted from Google. It's there forever. They have all kinds of profiles of you based on your age, gender, location, and web activity.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. What are you going to do about it? I don't, it's too late now. They already got all this stuff. Hey, when we come back, we'll take a look at the latest movies. What should you see this weekend? Check out the webpage. There's a lot of good stuff up there. You want to see the greatest closet ever built? This woman has the most expensive closet in the history of the world. She'll give you a tour of it. And then watch the greatest daredevil ever. If you have a fear of heights, a fear of this, watch this guy. It's unbelievable. It's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com, then go over to the Mark Simone page, or you can just go to 710WOR.com/Mark. Well, let's take a look at the latest films, what you should see this weekend. Allison Bales, excellent film critic. AllisonBales.com is her website. Follow Allison Bales on Twitter. Allison, how you doing?
Hey, Mark, I'm good. I'm here to talk about Ready Player One today, the new Steven Spielberg movie.
What kind of title is that?
Well, it's from a book. You know, I think if you're a gamer, if you've played video games, it will make sense. Don't ask me what video game it's taken from, but I think if you played video games in the 80s, you're going to love this film. It's from a book by Ernest Klein, which I actually read with my kids and really, really enjoyed it. So it was very interesting to see how Spielberg took this to the screen. A lot of changes, changes that I kind of missed, but it seems it's very petty to complain about books being changed when they go to the screen, because obviously things have to get changed. But this stars Ty Sheridan as a young kid living in the future. The world's gone to pot, as it always has done in the future. And everyone lives inside the virtual reality game, which is called The Oasis. It's not a game. It's a world that's been created by a Steve Jobs-type character who just dies and leaves a trail of hidden Easter eggs within The Oasis for anyone to discover. And whoever discovers this Easter egg will inherit the whole company worth billions of dollars.
This is the plot?
This is the plot, yeah. So it's a half real world movie and half set in a virtual reality world. It's very action packed. Some amazing CGI. Ben Mendelsohn from the TV show Bloodline plays the bad guy, of course, who he wants to find the Easter egg, and he's battling, you know, a young kid underdog who's this genius when it comes to playing video games and has immersed himself in 1980s culture. So for anyone of my age is going to really enjoy this film because of the music and the references to all the 80s pop trivia that's in it. And it's basically a lot of fun. It's a little too much action and CGI for my taste, but I did enjoy the ride. It's a good family film, I think, that you could go see with your kids.
But the only thing is, these Spielberg films were always major blockbusters, greatest films ever. Now you got The Post and this film. They're kind of little offbeat films that he's making now.
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird that he's come off The Post to do this film. And, you know, what you hear about Spielberg is that he's often working in pre-production on one, editing another, and also, you know, working on his next project. So he's got like three pots going at the same time. He's definitely a multitasker. So, I mean, you know, would I rather watch this or The Post? I'd probably rather watch The Post again because I love that kind of film. But I think it's great that he can go from one to the other and he can still turn out a huge movie like this. My problem with it is that it comes out on the heels of Pacific Rim last week.
Yeah.
And from the trailers, there's a lot of battling robots and they kind of look similar. And I just don't know if there's enough audience recognition for people who've read the book to be, oh, Ready Player One. Yeah, I want to see that. To me, it looks a little Transformer-y, and I think that could hurt it. So I think maybe the timing of its release was strange on the heels of Pacific Rim.
Yeah. If I want to watch Battling Robots, you know, just watch Rachel Maddow. But anyway, let's get to the next film.
Right, the next film. Okay, well, I have two films that are for an older audience. Let's say people who didn't play video games in the 80s and aren't interested in video games. There's a British film called Finding Your Feet, which is not a very good title. This is definitely for an older generation, and it stars pretty much every great British actor of a certain age working out there today. So it's about Imelda Staunton and her sister, played by Celia Imrie. If you don't know these names, then maybe the film will have less appeal. Timothy Spall is also in it. And this is about a woman whose husband cheats on her after 30, 40 years of marriage, and she sort of has to reassess her life and find herself, and she does it by shacking up with her sister, who's very different from her, and then they start dance classes together. So this is very much in the tradition of something like, not The Full Monty, because it doesn't have that kind of dark side, but those films where, like, Calendar Girls or...
yeah, it sounds good.
Cross-off. Yeah, I mean, it's a very sweet film. I can't say that it's, like, a great film, but it's very charming. It's very predictable. But, you know, it's great watching these actors. And, frankly, it's really nice to see older actors still making movies.
Yeah.
Because everything is geared towards, you know, the teenage audience. So that's nice.
I hate to say it, we're out of time, but give us one more real fast.
One more film. Burt Reynolds, another aging movie star from the past. There's a film called The Last Movie Star. And in it, Burt Reynolds plays a former actor, pretty much based on his own life, Smokey and the Bandit, you know, that kind of era, Burt Reynolds. So in his waning years, he's honored by a small film festival, and he goes to this small film festival, and it's kind of a little trip down memory lane for him.
That sounds pretty good. Now, I understand in this film he has to use a stuntman for the love scenes, but anyway.
Well, thankfully, there weren't any love scenes,
oh,
but
good.
They do show clips from Deliverance and Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, this sounds pretty good, actually.
It was a kind of cute idea. It doesn't quite work, but it's a cute idea. And if you liked Burt Reynolds and you want to see him still at it at the age of 82 or whatever, it's kind of nice little, you know, memory lane thing.
All right. Well, excellent work. Allison Bales at Twitter or AllisonBales.com. Allison, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Mark. Have a good holiday weekend.
Take care. Oh, coming up, we'll get to Monica Crowley. We got lots of stuff to talk to her about. Russia, North Korea, all kinds of things coming up next. Wait to hear the latest polls on Democrats. We'll get to that. You have a chance to win $1,000 coming up after the top of the hour. Now let's get to all the latest news on 710 WOR. Here's Joe Bartlett.
Mark, the wife of the poll.
Anybody who thinks that somehow Donald Trump is in the pocket of Vladimir Putin or soft on him, all of this should be dispelled, and not just because of what Donald Trump did this week, but because of what he's done over the past year plus, which is levy sanctions on the Russians for their interference in the last election. He has authorized the transfer of lethal force to the Ukrainians so that they can more ably fight the Russians, who control one-fourth of their country. He is taking on the North Koreans. They've long been an ally of Moscow. And he's taking on the Iranians. It looks like he's going to rip up the Iranian nuclear deal, and the Russians largely built the Iranian nuclear program. So in all of these areas, Mark, this president is far more aggressive toward Moscow than Barack Obama ever was.
Yeah, but the Democrats were saying, why does he denounce Putin? But that was the Obama approach. Make the speech and take no action.
Well, that's right. I mean, what a president says is obviously very important, but I would argue even more important is what a president does. And you take a look at this president's actions versus his predecessor's actions, which was basically zero, nil, which is why Vladimir Putin continued to march forward, grab Crimea, grab eastern Ukraine, because he knew the American president wasn't going to act. In this case, Donald Trump actually has acted. And so it matters less what the president says than what he does.
Also, this Kim Jong-un going to China, first trip out of his country, and meeting with the Chinese president. What is that all about?
Interesting, right? He took a train, a mysterious train trip from Pyongyang to Beijing. Look, they're trying to strategize because neither side knows what to do with Donald Trump, which is that is a fantastic thing. That's exactly where you want America's adversaries to be, Mark. You don't want our enemies knowing exactly what the American president is going to do or what he's not going to do. That's what we had with 8 years with Barack Obama, who used to telegraph everything. I'm going to pull out of Iraq in 6 weeks, and then it's all yours, you know. We now have a president who is really utilizing the cowboy approach to this, the rationality of irrationality, where you keep your enemies back on their heels wondering what you're going to do and what you're prepared to do. That's what this president is doing to great effect. Ronald Reagan did it. Richard Nixon did it, all to great benefit to the U.S. And I think when it comes to China and North Korea, these two guys got together because I think Kim Jong-un is freaking out that Trump called his bluff and said, yeah, I'll meet with you. because now he's like, holy crud, you know, now I actually do have to meet with the president of the United States. And I don't know how to manage him. I don't know how to talk to him. I don't know how to deal with him. So I think he went to Beijing for some advice.
Very interesting. Hey, this Saudi crown prince, he's in New York. He's staying at the Plaza. There's a thousand SUVs out on one side and a million people guarding him. He's meeting with Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos. He's meeting with Oprah Winfrey. He's meeting with Rupert Murdoch. He's all these CEOs, Tim Cook. What is he doing? Is he getting ready to open up his country to all these businesses?
Well, it could very well be. He's a younger guy. He has instituted a range of reforms in the Saudi kingdom already since he's been largely in charge. He's arrested a lot of the Saudi princes, billionaires, and kept them under house arrest because of corruption and so on. So it looks like he's genuinely interested in effecting some reform. We'll have to see how far it goes. But in terms of the business leaders he's meeting with, he was in Silicon Valley, I think, last week, meeting with those tech heads, and now he's in New York. I think, Mark, that what he has come to understand is that the Saudi kingdom for decades has ridden only on one export, petroleum, oil, right?
Yeah.
And that supported the kingdom for all of these years. But now he understands he's got to diversify his economy because we've got fracking here in the U.S. Now, thanks to Donald Trump, the U.S. for the first time in history is exporting petroleum. So now we're largely self-sufficient, and the West is becoming increasingly so. So the Russian economy is feeling this pain, and the Saudi economy is certainly feeling this pain. So I think he's here because he's like, look, you know, we got to take a page from the Americans and, frankly, the Israelis and diversify our economy. And I think he's starting that ball rolling.
So do you think he's also watching Dubai and saying that you could make it a resort, you could make it a destination, you could invite businesses from all over the world in?
Yeah, I think that's his line of thinking. Now, look, Saudi Arabia is the seat of Sunni Islam. The two holy sites for Islam are there. So and Saudi Arabia has long exported Wahhabi, the Wahhabi strain, the radical strain of Islam to the rest of the world. So if they're going to attract tourism, they've got to figure out a way to deal with that, because it won't just be fellow Muslims visiting Saudi Arabia like on the Hajj. It's going to be the infidel. It's going to be the Christian and the Jew who will come for tourism. So they've got to figure out a way to square that circle. But, you know, before Barack Obama killed Muammar Gaddafi and took him out, Gaddafi was trying to do the same thing with Libya. He was trying to take that beautiful Mediterranean sea line and turn it into a tourist destination for Westerners and others from around the world, and really turn it into a world-class resort area. Now, obviously, Gaddafi was taken out before he could do that, but I think the Saudis were sort of looking at that model going, you know what, maybe tourism of the kind Tunisia has or Israel has, you know, maybe we should try to go down that road, as well as developing a tech sector and other sectors that'll support this economy.
Hey, look at all these people. They can't wait to go to Cuba, this horrible dictator country. I mean, that became the chic vacation to go to Cuba. That'll happen with Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's right. I mean, look, even to go and do sort of a visit to the oil fields, You know, I mean, that would be interesting to me. I'd like to go and see that. So I think this young sort of modern hip prince understands what the future is. He's also got a very young population, the way Iran has got a very young demographic. And reform has to take place. You cannot live in the 21st century with, you know, an economy that is, you know, back in the previous century or centuries. You got to bring it up to date. And I think this young sort of hip prince, I'm not sure how far he's going to go in terms of dealing with Wahhabism, etc. But we'll see. The jury is still out.
I'm not standing at Ritz-Carlton either. I mean, it was like a prison 2 weeks ago. That's where they kept that prince locked up.
Yes, but you're not a Saudi prince, Mark, so I don't think you have to worry too much.
Yeah, all right. But beware, he's in New York, and don't try to go down 58th Street. It's 400 SUVs all parked there.
Yes, I know. I was in Midtown yesterday, and I saw like a fleet of SUVs next to a very chic shop, and there were all of these bodyguards and security outside with the earpieces, and I thought, oh, I don't think the president's in town. And then it dawned on me who was actually in town.
Yeah, no. The president wouldn't be at Louis Vuitton and Hermes. This guy
no
is.
Way.
So, well, Monica Crowley, always great talking to you. Now, go to The Hill. You can read a lot of Monica Crowley's columns there. Follow her on Twitter. And what is it, Facebook? Monica Crowley NY?
Yes, Monica Crowley NY for New York.
And, of course, you see her on the Fox News channel all the time and get her books. And Monica Crowley, thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thanks.
All right, take care. Oh, and everybody check out the webpage. We got some good stuff up there today. Speaking of buying stuff and shopping, look at this woman. She has the single greatest, most expensive closet ever built in the entire U.S. Take a look at this video. She'll give you a tour of her closet. Oh, and then watch this guy. If you've ever had a fear of heights or a fear of anything, watch this daredevil. All the things he does in this video. It's unbelievable. It's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com. Then go over to the Mark Simone page, or you can just go to 710WOR.com/Mark.